Chapter 8, The Nine Variations. Advantage and Disadvantage, The Infinite Variation of Tactics, The Five Faults.
Sun Tzu said, "In war, the general receives his commands from the sovereign, collects his army, and concentrates his forces. When in difficult country, do not encamp. In country where high roads intersect, join hands with your allies. Do not linger in dangerously isolated positions. In hemmed-in situations, you must resort to stratagem. In a desperate position, you must fight. There are roads which must not be followed, armies which must not be attacked, towns which must not be besieged, positions which must not be contested, commands of the sovereign which must not be obeyed." The general who thoroughly understands the advantages that accompany variation of tactics knows how to handle his troops. The general who does not understand these may be well acquainted with the configuration of the country, yet he will not be able to turn his knowledge to practical account. In the wise leader's plans, considerations of advantage and of disadvantage will be blended together. If our expectation of advantage be tempered in this way, we may succeed in accomplishing the essential part of our schemes. If, on the other hand, in the midst of difficulties, we are always ready to seize an advantage, we may extricate ourselves from misfortune. Reduce the hostile chiefs by inflicting damage on them. Make trouble for them, and keep them constantly engaged. Hold out specious allurements, and make them rush to any given point. The art of war teaches us to rely not on the likelihood of the enemy's not coming, but on our own readiness to receive him. Not on the chance of his not attacking, but rather on the fact that we have made our position unassailable. There are five dangerous faults which may affect a general. 1. Recklessness, which leads to destruction. 2. Cowardice, which leads to capture. 3. A hasty temper, which can be provoked by insults. 4. A delicacy of honor, which is sensitive to shame. 5. Over-solicitude for his men, which exposes him to worry and trouble. These are the five besetting sins of a general, ruinous to the conduct of war. When an army is overthrown and its leader slain, the cause will surely be found among these five dangerous faults. Let them be a subject of meditation.
Zhang Yu said, "No town should be attacked which, if taken, cannot be held, or if left alone, will not cause any trouble."
Zhao Gong told the story from his own experience. "When invading the territory of Xu Zhou, I ignored the city of Hua Pi, which lay directly in my path, and pressed on into the heart of the country. This excellent strategy was rewarded by the subsequent capture of no fewer than 14 important district cities."
Sun Ying, also, when urged to attack the city of Piyang, replied, "The city is small and well fortified. Even if I succeed in taking it, it will be no great feat of arms, whereas if I fail, I shall make myself a laughingstock."
Marshal Turenne said, "It is a great mistake to waste men in taking a town when the same expenditure of soldiers will gain a province."
Jia Lin told of extenuating circumstances with reference to the five obvious and generally advantageous lines of action. If a certain road is short, it must be followed. If an army is isolated, it must be attacked. If a town is weak, it must be besieged. If a position can be stormed, it must be attempted. If consistent with military operations, the sovereign's commands must be obeyed. But there are circumstances which sometimes forbid a general to use these advantages. For instance, a certain road may be the shortest way for him, but if he knows that it abounds in natural obstacles, or that the enemy has laid an ambush on it, he will not follow that road. A hostile force may be open to attack, but if he knows that it is hard-pressed and likely to fight with desperation, he will refrain from striking, and so on.
He goes on to describe several ways of reducing the hostile chiefs. Entice away the enemy's best and wisest men so that he may be left without counselors. Introduce traitors into his country, that the government policy may be rendered futile. Foment intrigue and deceit, and thus sow dissension between the ruler and his ministers. By means of every artful contrivance, cause deterioration amongst his men and waste of his treasure. Corrupt his morals by insidious gifts, leading him into excess. Disturb and unsettle his mind by presenting him with lovely women.
Of the fault of over-solicitude, Lionel Giles said, "Here Sun Tzu wished to emphasize the danger of sacrificing any important military advantage to the immediate comfort of his men. This is a short-sighted policy, because in the long run the troops will suffer more from the defeat, or at best, the prolongation of the war, which will be the consequence."
Chapter 9. The Army on the March. Mountains, rivers, marshes, plains. Understanding the enemy, training soldiers.
Sun Tzu said, "We come now to the question of encamping the army and observing signs of the enemy. Pass quickly over mountains and keep in the neighborhood of valleys. Camp in high places facing the sun, not on high hills, but on knolls or hillocks elevated above the surrounding country. Do not climb heights in order to fight. So much for mountain warfare. After crossing a river, you should get far away from it. When an invading force crosses a river in its onward march, do not advance to meet it in midstream. It will be best to let half the army get across, and then deliver your attack. You should not go to meet the invader near a river he has to cross. Moor your craft higher up than the enemy and facing the sun. Do not move upstream to meet the enemy. So much for river warfare. In crossing salt marshes, your sole concern should be to get over them quickly, without any delay. If forced to fight in a salt marsh, you should have water and grass near you and get your back to a clump of trees. So much for operations in salt marshes. In dry, level country, take up an easily accessible position with rising ground to your right and on your rear, so that the danger may be in front and safety lie behind. So much for campaigning in flat country. These, mountains, rivers, marshes, and plains, are the four useful branches of military knowledge which enable the Yellow Emperor to vanquish four sovereigns. All armies prefer high ground to low and sunny places to dark. If you are careful for your men and camp on hard ground, the army will be free from disease of every kind, and this will spell victory. When you come to a hill or a bank, occupy the sunny side, with the slope on your right rear. Thus you will act for the benefit of your soldiers and utilize the natural advantages of the ground. When, in consequence of heavy rains up country, a river which you wish to ford is swollen and flecked with foam, you must wait until it subsides. Country in which there are precipitous cliffs with torrents running between, deep natural hollows, confined places, tangled thickets, quagmires, and crevices should be left with all possible speed or else not approached. While we keep away from such places, we should get the enemy to approach them. While we face such places, we should let the enemy have them on his rear. If in the neighborhood of your camp there is any hilly country, ponds surrounded by aquatic grass, hollow basins filled with reeds, or woods with thick undergrowth, they must be carefully routed out and searched, for these are places where men in ambush or insidious spies are likely to be lurking. When the enemy is close at hand and remains quiet, he is relying on the natural strength of his position. When he keeps aloof and tries to provoke a battle, he is anxious for the other side to advance. If his place of encampment is easy of access, he is offering you bait. Movement among the trees of a forest shows that the enemy is advancing. The appearance of unlikely objects in the midst of thick grass means that the enemy wants to make us suspicious. The rising of birds into flight is the sign of an ambush. Startled beasts indicate that a sudden attack is coming. When there is dust rising in a high column, it is the sign of chariots advancing. When the dust is low and spread over a wide area, it betokens the approach of infantry. When it branches out in different directions, it shows that parties have been sent to collect firewood. A few clouds of dust moving to and fro signify that an army is encamping. Humble words and increased preparations are signs that the enemy is about to advance. Violent language and driving forward as if to attack are signs that he will retreat. When the light chariots come out first and take up a position on the wings, it is a sign that the enemy is forming for battle. Peace proposals, unaccompanied by a sworn covenant, indicate a plot. Where there is much running about and the soldiers fall into rank, it means that the critical moment has come. When some are seen advancing and some retreating, it is a lure. When the soldiers stand leaning on their spears, they are faint from want of food. If those who are sent to draw water begin by drinking themselves, the army is suffering from thirst. If the enemy sees an advantage to be gained and makes no effort to secure it, the soldiers are exhausted. If birds gather on any spot it is unoccupied, a useful way to tell that the enemy has abandoned his camp. Clamor by night betokens nervousness. If there is disturbance in the camp, the general's authority is weak. If the banners and flags are shifted about, sedition is afoot. If the officers are angry, it means that the men are weary. When an army feeds its horses with grain and kills its cattle for food, and when the men do not hang their cooking pots over the campfires, showing that they will not return to their tents, you may know that they are determined to fight to the death. The sight of men whispering together in small knots or speaking in subdued tones points to disaffection among the rank and file. Too frequent rewards signify that the enemy is at the end of his resources. Too many punishments betray a condition of dire distress. To begin by bluster, but afterward to take fright at the enemy's numbers, shows a supreme lack of intelligence. When envoys are sent with compliments in their mouths, it's a sign that the enemy wishes for a truce. If the enemy's troops march up angrily and remain facing ours for a long time without either joining battle or taking themselves off again, the situation is one that demands great vigilance and circumspection. If our troops are no more in number than the enemy, that is amply sufficient. It only means that no direct attack can be made. What we can do is simply to concentrate all our available strength, keep a close watch on the enemy, and obtain reinforcements. He who exercises no forethought, but makes light of his opponents, is sure to be captured by them. If soldiers are punished before they have grown attached to you, they will not prove submissive. And unless submissive, they will be practically useless. If, when the soldiers have become attached to you, punishments are not enforced, the soldiers will still be useless. Therefore, soldiers must be treated in the first instance with humanity, but kept under control by means of iron discipline. This is a certain road to victory. If in training soldiers, commands are habitually enforced, the army will be well disciplined. If not, its discipline will be bad. If a general shows confidence in his men, but always insists on his orders being obeyed, the gain will be mutual.
Dumu said, "Do not linger among barren uplands, but keep close to supplies of water and grass."
Zhang Yu supported this idea with the following story. Ma Yuan was sent to exterminate the robber captain, Wu Du Qiang, who had found a refuge in the hills. Ma Yuan made no attempt to force a battle, but seized all the favorable positions commanding supplies of water and forage. Qiang was soon in such a desperate plight for want of provisions that he was forced to make a total surrender. He did not know the advantage of keeping in the neighborhood of valleys.
Li Chuan told of the great victory won by Han Xin over Lungju at the Wei River. The two armies were drawn up on opposite sides of the river. In the night, Han Xin ordered his men to take some 10,000 sacks filled with sand and to construct a dam a little higher up. Then, leading half his army across, he attacked Lungju. After a time, pretending to have failed in his attempt, he hastily withdrew to the other bank. Lungju was much elated by this unlooked-for success, and exclaiming, "I felt sure that Han Xin was really a coward," he pursued him and began crossing the river in his turn. Han Xin now sent a party to cut open the sandbags, thus releasing a great volume of water, which swept down and prevented the greater portion of Lungju's army from getting across. He then turned upon the force which had been cut off and annihilated it, Lungju himself being among the slain. The rest of the army on the further bank also scattered and fled in all directions.
Mei Yao Chen said, "High ground is not only more agreeable, but more convenient from a military point of view. Low ground is not only damp and unhealthy, but also disadvantageous for fighting."
Zheng Yu quoted Liaozi, "The art of giving orders is not to try to rectify minor blunders and not to be swayed by petty doubts."
Chapter 10. Terrain. Six kinds of ground, balancing the forces within the army. Fame.
Sun Tzu said, "We may distinguish six kinds of terrain: accessible ground, entangling ground, standstill ground, narrow passes, precipitous heights, and positions at a great distance from the enemy. Ground which can be freely traversed by both sides is called accessible. With ground of this nature, be before the enemy in occupying the raised and sunny spots, and carefully guard your line of supplies. Then you will be able to fight with advantage. Ground which can be abandoned but is hard to reoccupy is called entangling. From a position of this sort, if the enemy is unprepared, you may sally forth and defeat him. But if the enemy is prepared for your coming, and you fail to defeat him, then, return being impossible, disaster will ensue. When the position is such that neither side will gain by making the first move, it is called standstill ground. Each side finds it difficult to move, and the situation remains at a deadlock. In a position of this sort, even though the enemy should offer attractive bait, it will be advisable not to stir forth, but rather to retreat, thus enticing the enemy in his turn. Then, when part of his army has come out, we may deliver our attack with advantage. With regard to narrow passes, if you can occupy them first, let them be strongly garrisoned and await the advent of the enemy. Should the enemy forestall you in occupying a pass, do not go after him if the pass is fully garrisoned, but only if it is weakly garrisoned. With regard to precipitous heights, if you arrive before your adversary, occupy the raised and sunny spots, and there wait for him to come up. If the enemy has occupied precipitous heights before you, do not follow him, but retreat and try to entice him away. If you are situated at a great distance from the enemy, and the strength of the two armies is equal, it is not easy to provoke a battle, and fighting will be to your disadvantage. These six are the principles connected with earth. The general who has attained a responsible post must be careful to study them. An army may be exposed to six calamities, not arising from natural causes, but from faults for which the general is responsible. These are flight, insubordination, collapse, ruin, disorganization, and rout. Other conditions being equal, if one force is hurled against another 10 times its size, the result will be the flight of the former. When the common soldiers are too strong and their officers too weak, the result is insubordination. When the officers are too strong and the common soldiers too weak, the result is collapse. When the higher officers are angry and insubordinate, and on meeting the enemy give battle on their own account from a feeling of resentment before the commander-in-chief can tell whether or not he is in a position to fight, the result is ruin. When the general is weak and without authority, when his orders are not clear and distinct, when there are no fixed duties assigned to officers and men, and the ranks are formed in a slovenly, haphazard manner, the result is utter disorganization. When a general, unable to estimate the enemy's strength, allows an inferior force to engage a larger one, or hurls a weak detachment against a powerful one, and neglects to place picked soldiers in the front rank, the result must be a rout. These are six ways of courting defeat, which must be carefully noted by the general who has attained a responsible post. The natural formation of the country is the soldier's best ally, but the power of estimating the adversary, of controlling the forces of victory, and of shrewdly calculating difficulties, dangers, and distances constitutes the test of a great general. He who knows these things, and in fighting puts his knowledge into practice, will win his battles. He who knows them not, nor practices them, will surely be defeated. If fighting is sure to result in victory, then you must fight, even though the ruler forbid it. If fighting will not result in victory, then you must not fight, even at the ruler's bidding. The general who advances without coveting fame, and retreats without fearing disgrace, whose only thought is to protect his country and do good service for his sovereign, is the jewel of the kingdom. Regard your soldiers as your children, and they will follow you into the deepest valleys. Look on them as your own beloved sons, and they will stand by you even unto death. If, however, you are indulgent, but unable to make your authority felt, kind-hearted, but unable to enforce your commands, and incapable, moreover, of quelling disorder, then your soldiers must be likened to spoiled children. They are useless for any practical purpose. If we know that our own men are in a condition to attack, but are unaware that the enemy is not open to attack, we have gone only halfway toward victory. If we know that the enemy is open to attack, but are unaware that our own men are not in a condition to attack, we have gone only halfway toward victory. If we know that the enemy is open to attack and also know that our men are in a condition to attack, but are unaware that the nature of the ground makes fighting impracticable, we have still gone only halfway toward victory. The experienced soldier, once in motion, is never bewildered. Once he has broken camp, he is never at a loss. Hence the saying, if you know the enemy and know yourself, your victory will not stand in doubt. If you know heaven and know earth, you may make your victory complete.
Zheng Yu told the story about Pei Xing Jian, who was sent on a punitive expedition against the Turkic tribes. At nightfall, he pitched his camp as usual, and it had already been completely fortified by wall and ditch when suddenly he gave orders that the army should shift its quarters to a hill nearby. This was highly displeasing to his officers, who protested loudly against the extra fatigue which it would entail on the men. Pei Xing Jian, however, paid no heed to the remonstrances and had the camp moved as quickly as possible. Later that night, a terrific storm came on, which flooded their former place of encampment to the depth of over 12 feet. The recalcitrant officers were amazed at the sight and owned that they had been in the wrong. "How did you know what was going to happen?" they asked. Pei Xing Jian replied, "From this time forward, be content to obey orders without asking unnecessary questions."
Chen Hao defined the six ways of courting defeat as follows. Neglect to estimate the enemy's strength, want of authority, defective training, unjustifiable anger, non-observance of discipline, failure to use picked men.
Du Mu told this story of the famous general Wu Qi. He wore the same clothes and ate the same food as the meanest of his soldiers, refused to have either a horse to ride or a mat to sleep on, carried his own surplus rations wrapped in a parcel, and shared every hardship with his men. One of his soldiers was suffering from an abscess, and Wu Qi himself sucked out the virus. The soldier's mother, hearing this, began wailing and lamenting. Somebody asked her, "Why are you crying? Your son is only a common soldier, and yet the commander-in-chief himself has sucked the poison from his sore." The woman replied, "Many years ago, Lord Wu performed a similar service for my husband, who never left him afterward, and finally met his death at the hands of the enemy. And now that he has done the same for my son, he too will fall fighting I know not where."
Li Chuan tells similarly of the Viscount of Chu, whose soldiers were suffering severely from the cold. He made a round of the whole army, comforting and encouraging the men, and straightway they felt as if they were clothed in garments lined with silk.
Du Mu told the story of Lu Meng during the occupation of the town of Jiangling. He had given orders to his army not to molest the inhabitants nor take anything from them by force. Nevertheless, a certain officer serving under his banner, who happened to be from the same town as the general, ventured to appropriate a bamboo hat belonging to one of the people in order to wear it over his regulation helmet as protection against the rain. Lu Meng considered the fact of his being a native of the same town as the culprit should not be allowed to palliate a clear breach of discipline, and accordingly he ordered his summary execution, the tears rolling down his face, however, as he did so. This act of severity filled the army with wholesome awe, and from that time forth, even articles dropped in the highway were not picked up.
Chen
Chapter 11. The Nine Situations. Nine strategic kinds of ground, advantages of adversity, changing plans, nine principles, alliances, and rewards.
Sun Tzu said, "The art of war recognizes nine varieties of ground: dispersive ground, facile ground, contentious ground, open ground, ground of intersecting highways, serious ground, difficult ground, hemmed in ground, desperate ground." When a chieftain is fighting in his own territory, it is dispersive ground, so called because the soldiers, being near to their homes and anxious to see their wives and children, are likely to seize the opportunity afforded by a battle and scatter in every direction. When he has penetrated into hostile territory, but to no great distance, it is facile ground. Ground that can be of great advantage to either side is contentious ground. Ground on which each side has liberty of movement is open ground. Ground which forms the key to three contiguous states, so that he who occupies it first as most of the empire is his command, is ground of intersecting highways. When an army has penetrated into the heart of hostile country, leaving a number of fortified cities in its rear, it is serious ground. Mountain forests, rugged steeps, marshes, and fens, all country that is hard to traverse, this is difficult ground. Ground which is reached through narrow gorges, and from which we can only retire by tortuous paths, so that a small number of the enemy would suffice to crush a large body of our own men, this is hemmed-in ground. Ground on which we can only be saved from destruction by fighting without delay, this is desperate ground. On dispersive ground, therefore, fight not. On facile ground, halt not. On contentious ground, attack not. On open ground, do not try to block the enemy's way. On ground of intersecting highways, join hands with your allies. On serious ground, gather in provisions from all sides. In difficult ground, keep steadily on the march. On hemmed-in ground, resort to stratagem. On desperate ground, fight. Those who were called skillful leaders of old knew how to drive a wedge between the enemy's front and rear, to prevent cooperation between his large and small divisions, to hinder the good troops from rescuing the bad, the officers from rallying their men. When the enemy's men were scattered, they prevented them from gathering. Even when their forces were united, they managed to keep them in disorder. When it was to their advantage, they made a forward move. When otherwise, they stopped still. If asked how to cope with a great host of the enemy in orderly array and on the point of marching to the attack, I should say, begin by seizing something that your opponent holds dear. Then he will be amenable to your will. Speed is the essence of war. Take advantage of the enemy's unreadiness. Make your way by unexpected routes and attack unguarded spots. The following are the principles to be observed by an invading force. The further you penetrate into a country, the greater will be the solidarity of your troops, and thus the defenders will not prevail against you. Make forays in fertile country in order to supply your army with food. Carefully study the well-being of your men, and do not overtax them. Concentrate your energy and hoard your strength. Keep your army continually on the move, and devise unfathomable plans. Throw your soldiers into positions whence there is no escape, and they will prefer death to flight. If they will face death, there is nothing they may not achieve. Officers and men alike will put forth their uttermost strength. Soldiers, in desperate straits, lose the sense of fear. If there is no place of refuge, they will stand firm. If they're in the heart of a hostile country, they will show a stubborn front. If there is no help for it, they will fight hard. Thus, without waiting to be marshaled, the soldiers will be constantly on the alert. Without waiting to be asked, they will do your will. Without restrictions, they will be faithful. Even without orders, they can be trusted. Prohibit the studying of omens and do away with superstitious doubts. Then, until death itself comes,